Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up the deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Live from downtown St. Louis in the Lumiere Place Poker Room. Welcome to the Final Table. I'm Paul Harris with St. Louis's own poker millionaire, Dennis Phillips. And we were just moments ago sitting here talking about our plans for the World Series of Poker, which is now just 8 days away. Can you believe that a year ago today, you knew you were going to go and you knew you were going to play in the main event, but you were going to be a rookie?
Oh, absolutely. It's awesome. I can't believe the last 12 months, you know, flying around the world here and there, making new friends, doing a ton of things. Who'd have thunk it? You know, it's amazing.
How is your game now compared to a year ago when you were going out there as a main event rookie?
When I went out there, I thought I was a damn good player.
Yeah.
And now I know I wasn't. How's that for putting it bluntly?
Well, you've been in so many more events, and you played against so many more big-name pros.
Absolutely.
And you've gotten to know a lot of these guys. How has that changed your game, do you think? Has it added finesse to your game?
I don't know about finesse. I don't know what wording you want to do with it, but definitely my game has changed. I really think my game has stepped up several notches. It's like anything else. If you're in AAA ball and you get moved to the pros, to the major leagues, I'm telling you, either step up your game or you're going to go right back down to the minors.
So what are your plans for the series? Now that we're just 8 days away from the beginning of this thing, are you planning? Obviously, you're going to be in the main event again.
Absolutely. I'm flying out on the 27th. The first event out there that I'm going to be sitting down at is the 40K event number 2.
Wow.
It'll be a monster. They've never had this before. It's a 40,000 entry. They're expecting anywhere from 200 to 300 people in it, so the pot's going to be immense. Mm-hmm. It would be nothing but the pros. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, there'll be a handful of other people in it. But when you sit down at this table, whatever table I'm going to be at, I know I will recognize most of the people at the table, and they'll recognize me. And it's like, I probably played against most of them, frankly, in the last year.
Now, again, take us back a year ago. If you had sat down at a table a year ago and looked at some of those people whose faces and names you know now, how would you feel about it now compared to how you would have felt about it a year ago?
Well, I would have probably had not much reaction because my legs have been frozen. I've been too scared to even stand up. But anyhow, now I actually feel fairly confident sitting down with them. I play with most of these guys. I know I can play with them. They are extremely good. It's going to take some good cards, some luck, a lot of things to go through that kind of a field, because that is, it's a different kind of minefield.
Yes.
On it. And they're spaced very close together.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is going to be a nasty tournament, but it's one if you do well on, and I've played two of them. And I've done well in both of them. Again, I finished 12th in the Bahamas in the high roller there, and I finished 10th in the high roller in London up there on it. And that, again, was the same type of field. This one's just going to be a little bigger.
Yeah. So what else are you going to be doing in the series? You got the main event. That's 10K. You got the 40K event, obviously. So you're committed to $50,000 in entry fees already. What else are you going to be doing?
Well, quite a bit more. I will definitely be doing the Andy Up for Africa, the charity one that Andy Duke does. It'll be on July 2nd, I believe.
I hope you get to play at the same table as Joan Rivers.
Yeah, I'm thinking we may not see her there. There's just a possibility.
You're a poker player. You're a poker player.
Oh, God. That sounds more feminine than her. All right. So, anyhow, she of the facelifts. God, I would love for her to show up there. Then we can call her one name.
Uh-huh.
And it won't be, never mind, I won't even go there.
All right. So now you're in for the Andy Up for Africa. That's a 5K event, right?
That is true, yeah.
All right. What else is on the roster?
I'm going to play a number of them in between then. I've got about 4 weeks in between. I'm going to play as many of the events as I can.
Like 1500 and 2000 and $2,500 buy-ins?
Absolutely. Yeah. One after another, I'm going to be playing out there. I'll probably take a couple of breaks, come back to St. Louis at least one time, maybe twice, for 2 or 3 days. But I will be playing an awful lot of them.
Will you sit down and play the horse games? Will you sit and play the Raz games, the PLO, the Omaha High-Low, et cetera?
I'm going to be concentrating on the No Limit Texas Hold'em. Will I play a couple of the others? Yes. But actually, whichever ones fit into it.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly a limit game, possibly an Omaha game. I'm not for sure.
Very exciting.
It is extremely exciting. Now I can go out there. Now I can play all these others. Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, let me ask you about what you think I should do, because as you know, I'm going to be out there a couple days after you, and I'm planning on spending the first 9 days or so of the event out there. And I'm going to get in there the night before what they call the stimulus special, the $1,000 entry on that Saturday, the first Saturday of the World Series, an event that they think could draw as many as 5,000 players, which would be the biggest non-main event field for any World Series event in history. With 5,000 people in there and 1,000 people, you know, now you got $5 million minus fees that'll be taken out of that. So, you know, you're playing for a pretty big purse there. But, and this is my thinking. You know, you're thinking 10K, 40K. I'm wondering about the 1K. I don't have any problem buying into a 1K event, but my problem is that I play in local tournaments here in St. Louis where the buy-ins are much less, but you get the same amount of chips.
Right.
And they're doing triple chips this year at the World Series.
Yes.
So if it's a 10,000 event, you get 30,000. In the 1K, obviously, you would get 3,000 in chips. 3,000 in chips and blinds of 25 and 50, that's the same kind of stuff I can play here in St. Louis, whether it's down here at Lumiere Place or somewhere else. I tend not to like those because they're not deep stack enough for me.
Correct.
Which leads to my question to you. At the same time as the World Series, you've got Caesars with their mega stack series going on, and the Venetian with their terrific deep stack events going on, where you can buy in for $330 or $340 at the Venetian on that same day, and you start with something like 12,500 in chips.
Correct.
And if the blinds are 25.50, now you're really playing some good deep stack poker. Obviously, the payout is not going to be as much. There are going to be a few hundred people in the Venetian event as opposed to a few thousand in the bracelet event at the World Series. But you know me and you know my game. Which one do you think is better for me and for others who are kind of like me at my level who may be listening?
I'm going to give you some pros and cons to start with.
Good.
All right, we'll do it this way. Obviously, with the deep stack in the Venetian or at Caesars or anything like that, more actual poker is going to be played. You can actually sit back. You can develop it. You can analyze the table. You can check for tells. You can play it and gradually develop it and build your hand. More true poker is going to be played there. All right, that's a major plus. On the other hand, with the $1,000 buy-in, it's going to be a much easier field, because you're going to have a lot of people there that come just for that one. There's going to be buy-ins from celebrities and who knows what playing this field. There's going to be everybody in the world playing it just on the chance that they can do something here because, you know, it's being publicized so well.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have a lot easier tables. So do you do the minefield over here where you have to avoid the rookies and the amateurs that really don't know what they're doing? But if you catch a few cards, you know, you can double up. You can really build a stack very, very quickly in that 1K event versus going over in the other one and grinding it out and playing against better quality players on the average, I would bet. But, you know, having to go really deep into it and having to play true hard poker. You know, which is which? Because it's going to be a monstrous pot on the one with $5 million in it.
Yeah.
First prize is going to be well into six figures.
Yeah.
Actually, I know your game. You are better suited to play over at Caesars the Venetian. You can grind it out. You're a solid player. You can play with those guys really well.
Because I'm more of a deep stack player.
You absolutely are.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you something in this. I think I would, if I were you, I would tend to take that risk on this one particular tournament. Because if you do well in the first round or two, and they're not 20 or 30-minute rounds. These are going to be like 45 or an hour rounds.
Mm-hmm.
So it does help you there some on it. You've got to be careful not to bleed your chips and everything. But the reward on this thing could be so huge on it, and you're going to have, if you set at the right table, you literally can pick apart that table, find the one or two really solid players, kind of avoid them and play them solid, find the two calling stations that you know you can go with, find the guy that thinks he has to shove every other hand, you know, just like you would do on a lot of small tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
You've had enough experience with the smaller tournaments at 20 minutes. I think by expanding this out to 45 minutes to an hour, I don't know exactly what the levels are, that's going to help you a lot. You can do better than most, than by far, than the average person in picking apart a table and finding the weak spots. So all it takes is a little luck in the low levels. Because granted, with 3,000 starting chips, you're going to have some luck on this thing. But a little luck on it, build it up to where you can get to 6, a 7, an 8, a 9,000 fairly quickly. And then if you hit a bad beat, you're still okay. This would be the one tournament I really think I would gamble on and go to. That's me.
Okay.
So, you know, there's pros and cons both ways.
And I guess one of the other pros for making that decision is it's not like the deep stack event and the mega stack event at Venetian and Caesars are going away. They'll be going on every single
day
of the World Series as well.
A $300, a $500, $1,000 buy-in that everyone, every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's amazing. The amount of poker that's going to be played in Vegas in June is just unbelievable.
I think on that one day, when the $1,000 event is going on.
Yep.
Plus you add in the others, plus, you know, the downtown casinos, plus some of the others on the strip
are
going to be having.
No kidding.
You could have over 7,500 people all starting poker tournaments at noon on that Saturday.
I think you're low on the number. I think you're low.
Could be more.
Because if there's 5,000 in that one, the Venetian's probably going to have 60, 70 tables going on over there because they expect that many on the beginning of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I bet, dang, you could hit 10,000.
On one day in one city, all starting poker tournaments at the same time. That's why we're so excited about next week. And by the way, next week's show, we will be live again here at Lumiere Place in downtown St. Louis with the final table. 2 weeks from today, you will hear us from the Rio, where we're going to be set up. We're going to have our broadcast equipment set up, and we're going to grab as many of these poker superstars as Dennis has gotten to know, and we'll bring them in, and you know, maybe we'll just sit down and do 5 or 10 minutes with each of them. But 2 weeks from today, we will be live from the World Series with the final table here on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. When we come back, we'll have the poker coach Joe McGowan join us. Over the last couple of weeks, we've gotten fantastic response to Joe's tips and Dennis's tips for you on going to play in the World Series, whether it's the $1,000 event or up to the $10,000 event. Some strategies. We talked 2 weeks ago about early tournament strategies. Last week about middle tournament strategies. Duh, today we're going to talk about later tournament strategies. So we'll do that with Joe. And then later on this hour, we'll introduce you to a guy named Andrew Brown, who got his first WSOP bracelet last summer in the Omaha High-Low 8 or Better event, and also made a final table in Raz. So he'll join us a little bit later on here at the Lumiere Place final table on 590 of the Fan and KFNS.com. A quick reminder that we also podcast this show on thechipleader.com. And if you go there, you'll also find links to all of our terrific sponsors, including PokerStars.
PokerStars, that's the site that I love. If you want to go on there and play poker and you want to learn, you want to know all these different games, this is the site to go. PokerStars.net. Go on it, learn it, and then join me in Vegas. I will be playing on that site a lot. You can catch me anytime you want, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the largest site in the world and the best site in the world. Again, PokerStars.net. Go on there, join me, and then let's go to Vegas. How's that sound?
That sounds pretty good.
All right,
they're
cool.
They're giving away hundreds or
hundreds.
More?
No, actually, it will be, by the time they get done, probably in the thousands.
Thousands of seats to the main event.
Yeah. I think they've already topped 1,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
And still time to go.
And a ton of them still going on.
PokerStars.net, proud sponsor of the Lumiere Place Final Table. We'll be right back.
In just 2 short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 in Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thanks for joining us for the show. A quick reminder about email. We love to get it from you. We're going to try to make some time for a couple of email questions this hour about hands that people have played in tournaments or in live games. If you've got a question or something you'd like to talk with us about, DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com is the address. DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. And before the poker coach joins us, let's talk about American Image Salon and Spa in Chesterfield. If you've got a lady in your life who has a special event coming up, maybe she's got a birthday, maybe she is graduating, maybe there's a June wedding in somebody's immediate future, you need to know about American Image Salon and Spa and their gift certificates, perfect for any occasion, even for those just because times. you know, like, honey, I'm going out to Vegas, but I'm doing this for you while you're staying home. For $125, the ladies in your life will receive a spa facial, an express pedicure, and a mini Aveda hand and foot release. And if you mention Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on the Lumiere Place Final Table, that head-to-toe spa package will be only $100 instead of $125. You can buy it online at AmericanImageSalon.com, AmericanImageSalon.com, or call them in Chesterfield at 314-878-5210. From head to toe, men, women, and children will experience a one-of-a-kind treatment from American Image Salon and Spa. Again, that head-to-toe spa package is $125, $100 if you mention you heard about it from Dennis and Paul at the Final Table. Go to the website, AmericanImageSalon.com, or call 878-5210. American Image Salon and Spa, making a difference one image at a time. And now a man who knows a little bit about image, particularly at the poker table, and how to dissect your opponent's image and figure out what the heck he meant by that bet or check. Here is the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, how's it going, Joe?
Going great, going great. Hey, before we go into whatever we're going to talk about today, guys, I might have a little something to add with what you guys are talking about on playing the deep stacked events, whether it be Caesars or Venetian or playing the World Series events, if I
yep.
can get into that just for a minute.
Sure.
Okay. I totally agree with what both you guys said, and I feel the same way with what Dennis said as for your game, Paul, for why it might be better for the deeper stacked events. The only thing to add could be, you know, if you have a guy really any age but wants to come out and play in some events, if they want to have any inclination or any feel of any way that they want to try to make a career of poker or, you know, get some type of recognition or build their resume at all, if it's purely for the money, they might be better, you know, in a deeper stacked event if they're that type of player. But having a bracelet, you know, or making a World Series of Poker final table, I think that carries a lot of weight. So for me, you know, my decision when I'm on the fence, hey, should I go for the Bellagio or should I play this event or the deep stacked event, I always go for the bracelet. I always go for, you know, a final table or a deep cash to help build my resume. So I put a little bit of weight into that, and I might give up a little bit of money for that. You know, so if it's purely for the money, it might be a little easier, you know, at one of the other places. But if you want to go, you know, for a bracelet or final table or deep cash and build up a little resume, you might want to think of that as well.
I think that's good advice.
Very solid advice.
Absolutely. Very. Now, over the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about early and mid tournament strategies for these big events where you may have thousands of people that you're playing against in a $1,000 event, a $1,500 event, or even in the main event. So let's turn our attention now towards the later rounds. Let's say it's a three-day event and you've made it deep into day number two, and now you've gotten to the point where you're approaching the bubble where everybody makes some cash, usually 10% of the field. So let's say 5,000 people are in there. There are going to be 500 people who are going to get paid off at least as much as their entry fee was. And now you're down to maybe the last 600. Or you tell me, Joe, at what point does strategy start changing because you are approaching the money?
Well, you know, for me, and you and I have actually talked about this once before about my style, I'm not as much of like a strategist. I put a lot of, you know, weight and strategy, and I'm going to try this, and I'm going to try this, and this tournament I'm going to try something different, or I'm playing against pros, I'm now going to play this way, or I'm playing against amateurs, you know, I'm not going to bluff as much, you know, because pros are easier to bluff, they can fold a hand, you know, typically. I kind of take situation by situation, so talking about going deeper and deeper, you know, into the tournaments, getting close to the bubble, it does always depend. If you have a couple aggressive players and you can recognize that they're trying to work that bubble and they're trying to, you know, make very thin raises and take advantage of players that are playing exceptionally tight, you know, you might have to rebluff. And that always helps if you have a little bit of a tell or a little bit of a read. You know, that's what I go for. That's what I look for. But I always just take it case by case, tournament by tournament, you know, table by table, hand by hand of what I think is the best decision at that time, although I start looking for stuff like that when it does get in deeper into the event and, you know, people are trying to take advantage of the bubble and the players that are playing tighter, it's pretty easy to see and recognize. So the Fenton raise to me and a couple guys to my left are those type players trying to eke into the money. I'll raise with any two cards. You know, if I get resistance, I probably throw it away. If I have a reasonable hand and I read them as not that strong, I'll call the re-raise and maybe try to outplay them after the flop. You know, maybe they'll give it up unless they have a big hand. If I have a couple of the wild players to my left and I think they're going to re-raise me, you know, maybe I'll trap them or, you know, maybe I'll try to re-bluff them. So, you know, it just does depend.
Well, again, it depends, I think, tournament by tournament on it. People seem to start noticing the money, I guess is a polite way to say it, when you have maybe double the amount left. In other words, if 100 people are going to pay and you started out with 1,000, when it gets down around 200 or so, they start really starting to notice it and go, hey, I can actually make some money here type deal on mm-hmm. it. They don't get to play in a lot different, but they start noticing it, and you'll notice some people starting to tight up a little bit and some people getting really nervous about their stack that is shorter than that and possibly not playing their best poker then on it. And as you get closer and closer to that bubble, the play does change. You will find some people that literally will be throwing away pocket queens pre-flop in order to make the money, and good grief, you know, as soon as they make the money, then, oh, heck, there's a 10-8 of hearts, it's time to shove mm-hmm. type stuff. It's a huge difference right in there. And there isn't an exact number or anything, but I think if when you get about somewhere around that range, maybe if there's 180 left or 160 left, you can just start noticing the table changing. And when you get down to like 120 or so, you can really notice a change. And when you get down to about 105 left and there's 100 people getting the money, nobody wants to be out, and that's when you can really take advantage of it in a tournament, and then you really notice a difference. But again, that depends on your stack. Now, that's the kind of thing that if you're super short stacked and you do any kind of pushing at all, they're going to have almost the nuts to call you. I've seen people lay down monstrous hands of that thing. By the same token, if you're the deep stack and you've got it and you can afford to do it, just exactly what Joe was saying there on it, that if you push out there with just even a 3x raise or something, they're more likely to totally fold and forget about it and everything. A lot of difference in it. The one time when I'm careful out there is when I'm not a short stack, but I'm not much above it. I've got maybe 20 big blinds, 25 big blinds, one missed a hand or something's going to suddenly create a short stack for me. That's where I might be the tight person at the table. That's where I might shrink up a little bit and try to protect my chips a little more than I normally would.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. And, Joe, we've come up with this topic with you once before, but I want to revisit it, and that is the idea of protecting the short stack. Obviously, if you've got a deep stack, you want to protect it and make sure that you don't get dented so much that you're no longer above average. But let's say you are below average and you do have somewhere between 10 and 20 or 25 big blinds on the second day of a three-day tournament, and you're one of those people who has to be careful about making the money if you possibly can. How do you do that, and what does that do to your strategy? I know you're trying to play much more situational poker, but what does that do to your overarching strategy?
Well, let me see which direction I can take this. You know, I think first off, it can be pretty obvious of who is trying to play to make the money and kind of eke along, because as crazy as it sounds, guys will have the sheet in their pocket, the payout sheet, the payout structure, you know, they'll take it out. Really, I mean, you'll have one or two guys, they'll take it out every, you know, 20 minutes and kind of glance at it. They'll turn around, they'll look at the clock, see how many players are left, see how much time is left. You can tell the guys that are waiting, you know, doing a little clock management of trying to play slow so they get through their big blind, you know, and they don't have to pay the big blind when the clock changes and the levels go up. You know, you can tell who's trying to play to win and who isn't. And some other things you can do that you should do, you can be friendly and talk to people and truly have interest in, you know, them, and you get friendly with people as you play. Hey, where are you from? Where's your normal game? What's your game of choice? So that's what I like to ask. And, you know, guys say, I play 1-2, no limit, you know, a little Indian casino in Wisconsin or wherever. And the next guy, you know, he plays the highest stakes games at the Bellagio. You know, other guys play private games I've played in. I had no idea what type of player they were, and I didn't recognize that one of the guys, I shouldn't say, but he was the guy that had bluffed into the four kings on high stakes poker with the seven deuce. I think he was by Miami Mike. I played with him in the tournament and asked him that question. I was like, oh, okay. So clearly that guy doesn't care about making eking into the money, and he might be someone that's going to risk more and bluff a little bit more, and you want to be aware of that as you make your decisions. For me, I definitely do not like situations where you're up front, you're getting short, you have 10 big blinds. That seems to be the magic number or phrase in the poker industry where people kind of not necessarily panic, but start looking for spots and feel like they need to make a play or make a move or get some chips, you know, or get out, which I'm not a big fan of that type of talk, really. I really want to try to grind and look for a good spot. If I'm up front and I have King Jack or King Queen, I might actually throw it away. A lot of players, they may disagree with me. They say, go all in, take a chance. Someone needs a big hand behind you to wake up. The problem is that's where I get knocked out of most of my tournaments. I'll push in with a king, queen, or a spot, and I really don't have much information. I don't have a read. I'm just crossing my fingers that someone behind me doesn't wake up to a bigger hand. And I'm going to be called because they know my range is light and very wide. I could have 8-3. You know, I could have anything there, 8-9 of spades, and I might push all in just the average player in that spot that is getting short. Now the big stack is easy to call. You with ace-jack or, you know, certainly ace-queen, they're going to typically snap call because it doesn't hurt their stack, and my range is so light. They'll definitely probably call me in the big blind, closing the betting, picking up the blinds and antes, and my money with pocket sevens, assuming it's a race and the dead money in there. So I like to typically more fold those hands, and I'd rather actually wait, believe it or not, for king nine if I'm in a later position and someone that's been aggressive raises and I know they're raising light and I might have a little bit of read on them. I'll rebluff with a decent semi-bluff hand. A king nine might be the best hand there and go all in if they have a little bit of fold equity, which they probably won't, but I might get it in there and have him dominated with a hand like king nine as opposed to up front with a king queen. So
let me interrupt you for just a second, Joe. Let me interrupt you for just a second because I want to clarify something here for myself and for our listeners. So you're in early position and you've got king queen suited maybe, and you're more likely to throw that away. But that king nine suited, let's say you're in the cutoff position, one off the button,
right,
or you're on the button itself. Mm-hmm. Somebody else who's been fairly aggressive and raising, and you've seen that when they raise, they don't always necessarily have a big hand. It doesn't mean they've got aces, kings, queens, jacks. Their range could be much wider because of what you've seen them doing at the table. That's the kind of opportunity you look forward to do that re-raise. And now, by re-raising, are you trying to show them, I've really got a big hand here, because otherwise, why would I be re-raising?
Right, and also then the people to your left, the blinds are likely to fold. It's going to take a really big hand for them. It's been raised and re-raised. It's going to take a huge hand typically for them, unless they're a great player and they recognize the play that I'm making, which can happen for sure. But typically, it's going to take a huge hand for them to call. And I like making that play, like I said, but I said it quick, if the original raiser has some fold equity. He might give me respect. You know, I usually play what looks like fairly tight poker, although I make a lot of these bluffs because I look for these spots and I never have to show my cards, which is what you always want, because once your cards get tabled, you know, there's a whole lot of luck that gets involved there. If you can outplay people and never show your cards, you know, and you get those chips, you never worry about the luck factor. So if they have a little bit of fold equity and the respect is right on me, you know, they might fold right there because it might dent their stack enough to where they're willing to let it go because they're raising with any two cards. You know, Peter Eastgate, you know, played brilliantly, played great, not taking it away, but he raised light quite often and raised a lot. It depends upon the player that you're playing against. You know, your later rounds in the tournament, like I said, this is kind of late tournament strategy. You have a pretty good read on them. You've been playing with them for a while, probably all day, sometimes longer. Those are the spots I look for, and I would rather go with the king nine there. Certainly, you know, I would have loved it if I had an ace king, but likely I'm not going to wake up to an ace king. So you kind of have to make something happen for yourself, and you have to play a little bit of poker. You can't always wait for aces or kings because many times they don't come. So you have to find some spots that you think will fit and will think work and make sense.
I absolutely agree with that, and I'm hoping some of the people who are listening are realizing exactly what you're saying here. I mean, position on this thing and controlling it. And in this case, I agree with you 100%. A king nine in late position may be much better than a king queen in early position. Absolutely. You're controlling the pot. You know exactly what the people are doing. You may be, you know, in a position where you can close the bidding or push him off, isolate the guy, all sorts of different things. When you're in early position and throw that money out there, you're hugely gambling that not only are they not going to wake up to a big hand around there, but you're not going to get the deep stack who has an ace three and says, I can afford this, let's see if I can put him out, type stuff. Whereas if you act behind him and he raises with an ace three, and then you come over the top, he's going to go, God, he must have a hand. I'm telling you, you're saying. What's that?
Oh, sorry. A funny I'm saying with what you're saying, Dennis. If I have the king nine and it's been unraised and I'm in a late position, I'm kind of afraid to raise because now the big blind might call me with ace three. You know, if it's been on.
There you go.
You know, but because it's been raised and now I re-raise, it looks like I have a strong hand. Typically, people will lay down on the blinds, and now the original raiser says, oh, geez, he re-raised into three more players plus my original raise. You know, if it fits and you think it will work, this isn't going to work on everybody. Someone might see right through that and snap call me with, you know, anything. Or the guy might be an internet type of player that says, well, I think I have two life cards in my 7-8, all the dead money in there. I call, you know, and you have the best of it. But now your chips are in there, and you're not a massive favorite, you know. But again, I think I'd even have to take that for sure because, you know, you're getting short, you're getting the best of it, you know, hopefully in that spot. And, you know, then the cards come out, and it's up to the poker gods, if you will, if you can hopefully double up in that spot. But those are the things that I kind of look for, you know, just some. You know, there's many, many things, but, you know, that's definitely, you know, kind of how I tend to play.
We're at the Lumiere Place final table here on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on thechipleader.com. Andrew Brown, who got a bracelet in Omaha 8 last summer, is going to join us in just a few minutes. I'm Paul Harris talking with Dennis Phillips and Joe, the poker coach McGowan, about late tournament strategy, not just for the main event, but some of the other events that you might be playing in the World Series of Poker this summer, or any tournament that you do end up playing where you end up going fairly deep. Dennis, of course, has the experience of going deep enough to make it to the November 9 last year. And tell us about getting down from those last few tables to that final table and what was going through your mind as you looked around at your opponents and how you may have adjusted your strategy just a little bit. Obviously, there are the situational strategies, but there's more to it than that once you get that deep, isn't it?
It was, and in this case, to be honest, when we got down to 14, 13, 12, whatever on it, everybody at the table or everybody at the two tables knew what a massive difference there was between 9th place and 10th place. I mean, we're talking massive. Even then, I don't think we realized how big it was. And everybody wanted to stay at it, and every raise, I mean, let's put it this way. We've been there for hours and hours and days, and we should have been just totally so exhausted it was ridiculous. Those eyes were so wide open at that table. Everybody was on their toes. Everybody was watching every card. I mean, there was enough adrenaline flowing there to, I don't know, raise the Titanic, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it was unbelievable, and it tightened up, and I tightened up because I did not, all eyes were on us. We're playing this thing. You don't want to make some move and get really caught. I did make a number of bluffs. I mean, I think that was one of the times when I raised with a seven deuce under the gun because I didn't think anybody would call me just to try it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as somebody did, I was going to run for the hill so fast. But I just had to try it one time. I had enough chips I could do it. And everybody folded and it's like, dang, this feels good.
Also, at a certain point, you get down to 14 players. You know the final table is going to be 9. So you're really playing 7 and 7, and then you get down to 12 players,
yes,
and you're playing
yes.
6 at one table,
yes.
6 at another. And that's a different dynamic because now you're playing a shorthanded table against people who are very aware that each position that goes out can mean tens of thousands of dollars.
A huge, huge numbers. And I was, in my opinion, I was lucky to be at the action table, I guess you'd call it. Because what we kept doing is we'd knock somebody at our table and then he'd move one from the other one over. And then we'd knock somebody from our table out. I don't know the exact numbers, but I think of the last 7 people knocked out, at least 5 of them got knocked out at my table on it. We were definitely the ones that were pushing it a little more. And I had some pretty tough players at that table. So it was fun, let me tell you. Now that I look back on it, I know the adrenaline was flowing then, but I look back on that, and that was just the time of my life. I love that action there.
All right, so there's a little late tournament strategy for you. If you missed the past 2 weeks with early and middle tournament strategies, go to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, where you can download those podcasts. I got an email just the other day from a guy named Bob who said he's listened to those podcasts 3 times each before he takes off next week for the World Series. He has learned some important stuff that he hopes will help him get deeper into some of these World Series events. Joe, if you can hang on with us, we're going to break away here and bring in Andrew Brown. And then we're going to bring you back because there are a couple of hands that people have emailed us about that we want to get your thoughts on as well, okay?
Great, guys.
All right, that's Joe, the poker coach McGowan. He's Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. And this is the Lumiere Place final table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. This portion of the show brought to you by Show Me's Bar and Grill.
Shomies. And guess what, guys? I came from Shomies straight up here. There's one right here on the landing. You guys want to go down there for lunch, for supper, for whatever. Some great food. They have a chicken sandwich down there that they call a Sanibel. And I'm not even sure what a Sanibel is. All I know is I ate the daggone thing, and it was good.
Maybe named after the island in Florida.
There you go. I do not know. But they have luncheon specials down there every day. Great sandwiches for a very reasonable price. Go down there before the game. Go down there after the game. Have their Hurricanes. They call these little pink shorts down there. And I'm sure, Paul, you don't know what I'm talking about. But... never mind. Don't give me that look.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I've seen the Shomies waitresses. I'm not an idiot.
All right. No problem. Anyhow. But Shomies, great place. Down there, and they're now branching out all over the place. I was in one of the Fairview Heights last week. I went down to this one to it. I had no idea that these guys are branching out and franchising the way they are. And I think it's an excellent opportunity in this kind of an economy. Anybody interested in the franchising of a Shomies restaurant should check it out. Talk to Ron Coate. Phone number 618-444-4447. 618-444-4447. I'll tell you what, according to Ron, if you buy one or if your vision is good enough, you can buy an entire state. Let me tell you, they're trying to expand this. He's got the background to do it. He's got the franchises here that are being successful, and he's got the wings that are to die for.
That's Shomies Bar and Grill. For a link to Shomies, as well as all of the other sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table, go to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. We'll be right back.
If you wear gloves at work, you've got to know the Glove Guy. 314-509-5241 or glovesforyou.com. The Glove Guy is Bill Hyatt, who sells gloves all over the country from his base right here in St. Louis. The Glove Guy has over 400 different styles of gloves and safety wear available to you. Brown jersey gloves, PVC dotted gloves, single leather palm gloves, Kevlar gloves, leather driver gloves, and more chemical-resistant gloves, latex gloves, vinyl gloves, string knit gloves, palm-coated gloves, and he carries mechanics gloves, too. Don't buy your gloves one pair at a time. The Glove Guy sells gloves by the dozen and by the case. See everything the Glove Guy sells on his website, glovesforyou.com. That's gloves, the number 4YOU.com. If you don't see it there, the Glove Guy can help you find it. That's the Glove Guy, Bill Hyatt, 314-509-5241 or glovesforyou.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Tuesday night is poker night on 590 The Fan KFNS. So let's go back live to Lumiere Place Casino Poker Room with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris.
Thanks to all of our sponsors. Tonight we highlight Bill Hyatt from the Glove. He is the Glove Guy.
He is, absolutely.
If you're looking for gloves, as you heard in his commercial a moment ago, 800-GLOVES, the number 4, the letter U. Gloves for you is the phone number. And we're down here at the Lumiere Place Poker Room in downtown St. Louis. By the way, Lumiere is one of the sponsors of the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure St. Louis. If you want to race for $25, Lumiere will give you a $75 value package, including an official team T-shirt and a commemorative aluminum water bottle, an official team backpack. You get a free appetizer at the Asian restaurant here, which is called Asia, or at House of Savoy, their Italian restaurant. You can have a free dessert at their burger bar, a free buffet when you buy another one, and there's lots more. For more information, you go to LumierePlace.com. That's the website, and look for Race for the Record. That's what the event is this year. It's the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Cure, and if you want to be in the Race for the Cure, be part of the Lumiere team by going to LumierePlace.com. This portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watches.
Reactor Watches is the watch I wear, and I've been wearing it for the last year. If you're any kind of an avid outdoors man or woman, you need to check it out. Go to my website, check out the Reactor Watches. It's in style, it's beautiful, and the sucker is durable like you would not believe. They are the most durable watch brand made, period. They're the best built performance sports watch, period. They meet the demanding Swiss standards for precision, and they are just unbelievable. In fact, Reactor Watch offers a no-hassle, two-year, unconditional guarantee. You have any repairs needed to it, it's fixed in 48 hours, unlike the, I don't know, 6, 11 weeks that some of the other watch companies have. If you're looking for a watch, you have an active lifestyle, you're out on the golf course, you're doing whatever, you need to look to Reactor. Reactor Watches, durability that lasts a lifetime. So check them out on reactorwatch.com or on my website.
All right, now we welcome our guest for this evening, Andrew Brown, who has been a professional poker player for nearly a decade now and hit a big year last year when he won his first World Series of Poker bracelet in event number 16, the Omaha High-Low 8 or Better. He outlasted 551 entrants, including the legendary Ted Forrest. They went heads up for 2 hours before Andrew won the event and not only took the bracelet down, but $226,000. Also last year, he made it to the final table in the Raz event, and just a few weeks ago won $166,000 in the Scoop event online playing PLO. Andrew, welcome to our final table.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Good to be here.
It's a pleasure having you on the show. We've been talking a lot about World Series strategies, and right before our last commercial break, we were talking about late tournament strategies. We wonder if you have anything you can share with some of our listeners who might be going out to the series this year for the first time since you made a couple of final tables last year. Tell me how your play changes as you get to that last 27 or 18 or 9.
Absolutely. Well, a brief little correction. I actually didn't make the final table of the Raz event last year. I got very close. I was the chip leader with 20-something people left, but I think I finished 16th or 17th, something like that. But still a deep run, and I'm hoping to do well on that one again this year. But to answer your question, I think that one of the biggest struggles that a beginning or even intermediate player has deep in tournaments is that they get a little afraid and they start worrying about the money and the payouts instead of the strategy. And I think it's really important to be more and more fearless as the tournament goes on and the deeper that you get. I think that a lot of the good players I know, I mean, if you run stats on them, if you play online or anything, the numbers just go up and up. It looks like a chart, and they just get more and more aggressive as the tournament goes on. I think there's a lot of value into beating the people that are worried about going broke at the end of the tournament, right when it's crunch time, and the aggressive quality players really take over.
I agree with you quite a bit with that. And again, that's analyzing your table, finding out which ones are the tight ones, which ones are watching the clock, and taking advantage of that. So many people are afraid to go out on the bubble.
Yeah, absolutely. Bubble is the most valuable time of the tournament for an advanced player.
Tell me, Andrew, how you play defense against somebody against other people at a table like that who obviously have known that strategy and themselves are going to try to take advantage of it. How do you stay away from being stepped on?
Well, that's a tough question. You basically asked me how to play poker. I think that's the value, you know, of being able to gauge your opponents, and you have to, you know, pick your poison, so to speak. And when you're playing against players at a table, there's a bunch of people at the table, and you have to know, if possible, with all the information given based on what they're saying, the way they're acting, the way they've played, the hands they've shown down, the amount of chips they have, and everything, any information you have at your disposal to gauge whether or not they're a quality player and what they're capable of. And if they're capable of certain things, then it may restrict your mobility of being aggressive at the table. If I know that I got two killers to my left, I'm definitely going to be a lot. I'm going to, you know, go into my turtle shell and not do anything crazy, because I know that they're capable of making a light three bet or playing a little more aggressively just because they have position on me. So I'll be honest. I think just like the other good players, I tend to try to avoid the really good players at the table unless I have a unique situation, or, you know, if I know they're up to something. It kind of works both ways. It's a double-edged sword, because I consider myself having the ability to make certain plays, and if I think that other people have the same ability, then I know that they'll believe what I do the same way that I would believe what they do. And it really just works both ways. It's a matter of gauging your opponent and just playing accordingly.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of took away my response here, because I was going to put respect at the table and your table image and everything. If you build up a decent table image and you have the respect at the table, that enables you to do more of these moves and take a little more control and be a little more aggressive, then you'll get into it. So it's definitely the lead into it. But you touched upon it exactly. If there's two, three, four people at the table that have the respect at the table, you know, those are not the guys you really want to pick on, you know, that can make the move back at you.
Table captain, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, let's branch over for a minute. You play the Razz. You can play it again this year, I assume. All right.
Yep.
Give me some pointers on Razz. All righty. For the guy that wants to do, how do you play the worst hand possible?
Well, it's just kind of like an upside down game, but I think there's a lot of little tricks to Razz and intricacies, especially in a tournament situation, even though the game doesn't change too much, that people really haven't properly or deeply analyzed enough yet. And I think the same applies to a lot of other games that are out there right now, like the stud games and Hold'em variations are fairly advanced in terms of the game theory or the strategy that's going on, especially for tournaments right now. But with a game like Razz or even like Pot Limit Omaha, I think that the times are not quite caught up to proper strategy. And when it comes to a game like Razz, you have to be very good at just remembering what's out, because that's like it's literally one of the few pieces of information you have is remembering the previous cards that were dealt, and therefore what's more and less likely for them to have brick. You know, if they start with a fairly higher card, it's more likely that their two lower cards are very strong, because it's deceivingly strong. You know, if they have a 9 showing, a 9 is not that good as a starting hand in Razz, but if they're playing it, they probably have an ace as one of their other two cards, which necessarily doesn't, you know, it could be deuce 3. It doesn't have to be ace, deuce, or ace 3. It doesn't make too much of a difference. But against a good player, they'll know that you have an ace underneath, and then all of a sudden, if they catch an ace, and you catch a mid card, like an 8 or a 10, even if it doesn't look like you have the best flow and it looks like they improve, you have to be able to figure out that they probably bricked that ace because you didn't see any aces previously in the hand. But it's a fairly mechanical game. It's about the same as most limit games in terms of taking the lead and keeping aggression. Also, not to go into too much detail, but there's situations on 4th and 6th Street where, based on the size of the pot, people tend to bet when they think they have the best hand, but mathematically it doesn't make any sense to bet those streets in most situations when you have almost an identical board as your opponent, because it's just going to come down to what you get on 5th Street or on 7th Street in terms of who regains the lead or keeps the lead and then has the ability to take control of the hand and bet as if they have a stronger looking hand. So on 4th Street and 6th Street, based on the size of the pot, I tend to see a lot of intermediate players make a bad bet in that situation. Sorry to ramble a little bit, but Razz is a really unique game, and a lot of people don't enjoy it, but I happen to really love it. And anybody that tells me that they really like Razz, I instantly have a little extra respect for their poker game, because I love Razz. I think it's a beautiful game.
Well, that was some great insight into the game, too, so we appreciate that. We're talking with Andrew Brown, a professional poker player based in New York City, a place where poker hasn't been legal, but for a long time has had some of the greatest underground clubs in America, including the legendary Mayfair Club. Are there still places where you can play poker in New York City?
There are. The games have developed into more private settings, and I won't lie, as my career has gotten more successful because the stakes that I've been playing have gone up, the games tend to be more private. But I know most of the people when it comes to the New York City clubs and the poker scene, and I think that there definitely are a handful of games left. Tend to be the same people that you've seen over the last few years. But when all is said and done, unfortunately, poker has been kind of shut down a little bit here in New York in the last few years. Bloomberg, really, when he took over, he did a number on the clubs here, but I think he's backed off a little bit because he's made enough headlines, and I think that it's pretty safe these days. I know that there were some issues in the past, but the clubs that do exist right now are a lot of fun, pretty decent people, and it's really a nice scene, actually. It's a nice getaway when you're in the city, and there's not really a card room closer than Atlantic City or Foxwoods or Mohegan Sun, and you can just kind of go to a club and then go back to your apartment or whatever in the night and not have to worry about the traveling. But I really enjoy the poker clubs in New York. I think that I've been going for them for a long time. It's where I originally honed my skills as opposed to online, like a lot of the kids my age. But I really enjoyed them, and I learned a lot, met a lot of really interesting and unique people.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, it's coming time. It's almost time for event one out there at the WSOP. Just what are your plans out there? How many events are you going to play, and when are you going out?
My plans are to play. I set out a schedule for myself of the events that I wanted to play. Even though I consider myself pretty decent at the game of Hold'em, I think that the competition is so tough these days that I'm going to spend my time playing primarily the mixed game tournaments. mostly anything with Omaha in it, Omaha High Low, Pot Lemon Omaha. Certainly the Raz, super excited for that. I wouldn't miss that for the world. And then obviously the main event, you can't miss that one. It's too, way too big and important. The field is just so great. And I mean, okay. I really enjoy the smaller buy-in mixed game tournaments. That's where I figure I have one of the better shots of getting deep in the tournament. It's kind of hard to expect or even ask to make a final table or win a bracelet, but you know, again, especially after last year and how great I, you know, time I had, but I'm going to give it obviously my best shot. And my goal is just honestly just to make one final table this year. I'll probably end up playing between 7 and 12 events, and my goal is just to make a final table. I make a final table. I figured I did a decent job for the summer.
Well, congratulations on your bracelet in Omaha 8 last summer. Good luck with the series this year, and thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yes. Look me up out there, Andrew. We'll say, we'll have a cup of coffee or something. How's that?
He's off to dinner. I think that was his cab that was honking for him.
That's
cool. Andrew Brown, a professional poker player in New York, joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table in St. Louis. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips, and this portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, a nonprofit membership organization that is fighting for you, poker players all around the country. Unfortunately, we Texas, where Representative Jose Menendez had for the third year in a row tried to get Texas, the home of Hold'em, to legalize poker. Unfortunately, for the third year in a row, the governor was going to veto the legislation, so Menendez has withdrawn it. But he will try again, and the folks at the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance, are working in state legislatures like Austin and here in Jefferson City and in Springfield, Illinois, to try to legalize poker in more and more states across the country and in the Congress of the United States. But they can't do it without your support. Only costs $20 to join. If you're a poker player, you should be a member of the Poker Players Alliance. For details, go to ppa.org. We're back with more in just a moment. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Now, taking you from the flop to the river, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking poker at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
One of our major sponsors for this show each and every week is the company that sponsors Dennis Phillips as he travels around the world playing poker, and that, of course, is PokerStars.net.
Yeah, if you were listening to Andrew Brown there, you heard him talk about Raz, that talked about the mixed games, talk about the Omaha, the PLO. All of these games can be found on PokerStars. So if you want to become proficient at it, you want to go out there and pick out. What he was saying was basically these games are a little easier out there than the Texas Hold'em. So go online, learn the game, be proficient at it, and then join me in Vegas and we'll have some fun. Again, PokerStars is handing out more tournament seats than any other site in the world. This is the number one site worldwide, period.
Speaking of PokerStars, we have an email here from a listener named Gene to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com, who says he watched you play a tournament online on PokerStars and he noticed that you limped under the gun twice with aces. He said, do you do this a lot, and did you use it last year in the main event?
Well, I would love to have aces all the time under there. But no, what you want to do at a table is you don't want to become predictable, and so you will mix it up. And I've had some people watch one or two hands, maybe me online or at a thing, and they'll see me limp fold or something like that. You play these things a lot different. You'd never be consistent. I love limping with a powerhouse under the gun on an aggressive table. On a table that you assume somebody's going to come back over the top, where they're going to be going at it, because then you can have some fun with it.
So if the blinds are 1 and 200, and you're in early or middle position with aces, and you're and nobody's opened it yet, you might just limp with that to 200, knowing that you've got a player or two behind you who are likely to pop it with who knows what, certainly not better than you.
Yeah, the probability, especially you got somebody that always raises on the button. And there are players that do that. Again, they are predictable. That's one thing you don't want to be. So I have other people in the small blind. If everybody limps to them, no matter what they got, they're going to raise it against the big blind, any two cards. Well, that works a lot of times, but you also get snapped off every now and then. And I love it when you snap it off and people go, how can you limp with that? Well, I don't know, but I'll get back to you as soon as I get done stacking your chips.
All right, let's bring the poker coach, Joe McGowan, back in here. Earlier this afternoon, Joe and I were talking, and he said, let me tell you quickly about a hand involving a pair of tens that didn't quite work out the way the person with the tens wanted them to. Joe, tell that story quickly. We've only got about 3 minutes to go.
Okay, sure. A little background. I played with this player here in Palm Springs for a number of years. He moved out to L.A. Good friend of mine. He's going to kill me for telling the story if he hears the show. But Thank you, Dennis. He started out playing no limit. He had a tough time with it. Went to 100, 200 limit. Did okay. Went up to 300, 600 limit. I don't think did well. And then now he's been playing the last couple of years 20-40, which is pretty much the big game that's a regular game at Commerce. And he called me the other night and said, Joe, I played this hand. What do you think? And I'll do this roughly. It may not be exact, but it's going to be close enough for the story.
All right, but go quickly.
Someone limped in for 40. Someone else called the 40. He looks down at two tens, late position, raises. There might even been one more limper. Goes to 400. Then the big blind re-raises to 1600. Fold, comes back to him, closing the bet, and he only had 3,000 in front of him, which is very short for that game. The other player had about 30,000. He decided to call the 1600 with only 1400 behind, telling me that he was going to fold if he didn't hit the 10 and just get away from the hand, which I didn't like. I didn't like at all. I think I would have folded right there. But he was convinced that the raiser, being a very tight player and having a pretty good read, had aces or kings, had a big hand. I felt like he needed at least 8-1 as far as the stacks go to make that call in trying to
Stop
the set for implied odds. I really didn't like the call. After the flop, a horrible flop came with 8-9 jacks. So he pushed all in. The guy snap called his kings. He didn't improve and lost his 3,000.
Yeah.
But I think when you call, tens may not be a small pocket pair. To me, it's 2 through 9. You want to get the right price. And the right price many times is what your stack is compared to the raiser stack. And does it make sense to call when the odds are 7-8-1 to hit the set? Do you have the implied odds that you're going to get more chips when it's really, pocket fours or fives or small pocket pair to hit that set? You want to get the right price. Think of the math.
That's a great lesson there. Yeah, it's 7-1 against you hitting your set. If you're playing against somebody and you can be sure that you're going to get 10 or 11-1, that you're going to get their entire stack, you got to put in 300 and you might win 3 or 4,000. Well, obviously right there, that's mathematically the right thing to do. But in his situation, he put in over half of his stack with no backup whatsoever and ended up losing the whole thing. That's a great lesson to finish with tonight. Thank you, Joe McGowan, the poker coach. Dennis Phillips, St. Louis's poker millionaire. I'm Paul Harris. We will be back once again next Tuesday night from 7 to 8 here on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. The night before we leave for World Series of Poker 2009. Thanks to all of our sponsors. Thanks to those of you who download this podcast from thechipleader.com. Send us your email at DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. Have a good night.